This is Radio MD COVID-19 Daily, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Caitlin White. Happy Friday. We've made it to May. Can you actually believe it? When every day feels exactly the same as the others, I'm feeling pretty hopeful about a new month. Coming up in this episode, hear about how COVID-19 is affecting people with different comorbidities, such as heart and lung issues, and our healthcare heroes today are the NIAC mask makers. When New York City needed hospital space, they got creative, as New Yorkers often do. Film location scouts pitched in. For the story, we go to Radio MD's Bill Klaproth.
When someone floated the idea of placing patients on a couple of empty floors in an abandoned Brooklyn hospital, Susan Pezos, a film location scout, was able to immediately upload photos of the building because she had already been there checking it out for the television series FBI. And Jennifer Lynn, who has scouted locations for Boardwalk Empire, the Royal Tannenbaums, and City on a Hill, also volunteered on the task force to locate buildings for hospital overflow. However, in the end, the locations weren't needed, but the task force's findings are being written up in case there's a second wave of the virus. Happy to volunteer, though. It was, as Miss Lynn called it, the ultimate scout. For Radio MD News, I'm Bill Klaproth.
With quarantine fatigue settling in, researchers are finding that more Americans are breaking stay-at-home orders. Radio MD Scott Webb.
According to the Washington Post, cell phone data indicates that more and more people are traveling for the first time since stay-at-home was implemented, and quarantine fatigue may be the reason. Researchers at the University of Maryland in College Park have been tracking data from more than 100 million cell phones monthly to assess travel behavior during the pandemic. Researchers presume someone is staying home if their cell phone does not move at least 1 mile per day. In the week of April 13th, researchers determined that the national average of people whose phones were at home decreased by 31%. It's safe to conclude that if cell phones are leaving homes, people are too. Reporting for Radio MD News, I'm Scott Webb.
With many cities and states beginning to reopen bit by bit, one fact remains certain, that masks are a key part to fighting this illness. But in California's Bay Area, there is a new rule. Your mask can't have a valve in it. That's because a mask with a valve may protect you from some pathogens in the air, but it doesn't protect the people around you from your own breath. A recent article in Fast Company says those are usually one-way valves. That means it closes when you breathe in, so pathogens can't get in through it. But when you breathe out, this valve opens, creating a doorway of unfiltered exhalation to leave the mask. COVID-19 affects people with different comorbidities in so many ways. Joining us for a discussion on the connection between the heart, lungs, and COVID-19, as well as precautions and preventative measures to take for people with pre-existing heart conditions, is cardiologist Dr. Steven Sinatra. Dr. Sinatra, tell us about your background as a cardiologist. In your career, have you ever seen a more threatening public crisis than COVID-19?
You know, as a heart specialist, I've seen lots of viral flus before, but I've never seen anything as virulent as this.
Wow. With so much attention on COVID-19, being focused on, you know, respiratory issues and the lungs, how does it affect the heart?
Well, the lungs and the heart are connected. I mean, mm-hmm. The circulations are definitely similar. And basically, whenever you affect the lung, the heart can be attacked at the same time. Now, I've seen this clinically myself, not with this virus, but with other influenzas in the past. So whenever there was an outbreak, for example, I would see people in the CCU, the ICU, and then later on, some of these people developed what we call myocarditis, which means inflammation of the heart, which is a sequelae of the pulmonary inflammation. Now, the good news, a lot of these people improved over time. However, a few of them needed additional cardiovascular support with pharmaceutical interventions.
Earlier this week, you know, we've seen blood clots and stroke in young people as a new worrying symptom of COVID-19. Can you tell us a bit more about that discovery?
Well, I think one of the things with COVID-19, and we're learning on a day-to-day basis, is that the blood clotting that we're seeing in the lung is unusual. Even the ventilatory support. I mean, I'm hearing from my colleagues that when these patients are intubated, it's not a good situation. And what they're seeing is very low oxygen saturations. And some of these doctors, which have told me that they couldn't believe that people were still surviving. So this virus is something that we're learning about on a day-to-day basis. And what we used to do in the past may not work out for what we need to do in the immediate present and future. I'm sure retrospectively we're going to look at all these cases and determine the best way going forward when this virus reemerges again in the fall or the winter of 2021.
And you think it's going to come back like that?
Well, typically influenzas can recycle.
Okay.
And they can come back, you know, during the late fall and early winter months. I hope it's not the case with this one, but it could happen.
What precautions do people with pre-existing heart problems need to take during this pandemic?
That's a great question. And I think that's the most important question to answer. In other words, what can people do at home to really improve their immune system? And I would say this. I would say eat less sugar. I mean, Americans, a typical American eats about 160 pounds of sugar a year. That's outrageous. And the problem with eating a lot of sugar is not only does it quench your white blood cells, in other words, it makes them sluggish, it makes them sort of inactive when you eat sugar. So you're taking away a major immune defense. But sugar results in weight gain, it results in insulin secretion. Insulin is a very pro-inflammatory hormone. So what people need to do, and the reframe of this virus, is that, oh, okay, how can I help myself at home? Well, if you can lose 5 or 10 pounds or 15 pounds, go on an exercise program, a walking program, take in less sugar, less carbohydrates, now you're going to fortify your immune system, you're going to lessen your risk of diabetes, and you may thwart off this virus. Remember, we have about 100 million diabetics in this country, and diabetes is a very serious comorbidity because diabetics get more complications than non-diabetics. So whatever people can do, they can reframe this virus and say, okay, I'm going to take responsibility for myself. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to exercise more. I'm going to take in less sugar. And when you do that, you fortify your immune system.
Looking into the future, will people who survive COVID-19, do you think they'll have heart problems as a result? And I mean, what will the protocol be for these survivors?
Well, that's another great question, because getting through the epidemic is one thing, but could there be later sequelae of this, you know, very virulent virus? It could be. Certainly, cardiovascular problems can be seen, like I mentioned before. GI problems may be manifest, even the brain, because this virus can, travel through the circulation. So we're going to learn a lot about this virus going forward in the next few months. A lot of the information, unfortunately, is going to come from postmortem studies and what we call retrospective analysis. In other words, the epidemic has passed. What can we learn from the death of many unfortunate people, as well as people who survived? I think, again, fortification of the immune system, you know, we talked about less sugar, a little walking, getting outside, getting some vitamin D from the sunlight. And I also feel that targeted nutritional supports are absolutely incredible here. For example, I like quercetin. It's found in onions and apples and black tea. You can take it as a supplement. But quercetin is a bioflavonoid. It helps support the lung. And it's actually it's combative against respiratory viruses. I also like a supplement called N-acetylcysteine. It's called capital NAC, NAC. This is broken down to what we call glutathione in the body, and it helps create an enzyme in the body that is absolutely protective against the virus. And studies have shown that a mere 1,000 milligrams of N-acetylcysteine a day can shorten the length of a viral illness by 2 or 3 or 4 days, so that's good. I like resveratrol, I like curcumin, I like coenzyme Q10. There's so many supplements I like that can help, you know, support our immune system going forward, you know, with this epidemic.
Well, great. Dr. Sinatra, thank you so much for your time and for this information.
All right. Thank you as well, and God bless.
Let's go to some happy news. Our healthcare heroes today are the NIAC Mask Makers, a community project providing PPE masks for doctors, nurses, and staff at Montefiore NIAC Hospital as they serve Rockland County, New York, during the increased patient activity caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Here to tell us more about that group is Bill Batson.
So the co-founder, Donna Tim, and I have worked for many years with an organization called the NIAC Art Collective. And we, our families are friends. We you know, live in a small village together. And we both, on the same Saturday morning, woke from these kind of fever dreams, realizing that everyone in our community was going to need a mask. And we also realized that most people wouldn't have them. They wouldn't have the wherewithal to either buy them or make them. And the NIAC Art Collective happens to be a group of people with skill sets that lend themselves to sewing and making and designing and gathering materials. And the thing that amazes me about the response, the community response to COVID-19, is that we're learning that we're very talented. We're very talented, resourceful people. And I don't even think I'm talking about Americans. I think I'm talking about the people in the world. And we all been rising to the occasion. So Bob, her husband, threw up a Facebook page. And before we knew it, I think we had 100 volunteers. And then NIAC, Monster NIAC Hospital comes in. Because of my work with the NIAC Chamber of Commerce, I developed a relationship with Dr. Mark Geller, the president and CEO. I reached out to him immediately and I said, I know that you are waiting for real, you know, manufactured PPE, but can we be the cavalry in the meantime? And he was very responsive. He reached out to me personally right away. And I suggested that he review a template from us to see if it met their needs. We created what I think is called a grade 2 mask, certainly not surgical, but it's for all the staff and for people when they're not engaged with patient care, that but they're in the hospital to avoid contagion and transmission, they wear these masks. So we dealt with his infection preventionist. We came up with a design, and I think we stunned ourselves. I think at the end of the first week, we got into production and supplied him with about 100 masks. Within 2 weeks, we had fulfilled our initial goal, which was 2,000 masks. At the end of a month, we're nearing our 10,000th mask.
Wow.
And we branched out beyond Monster NIAC. We've gotten about 1,000 masks to the Rockland Psychiatric Center. We've gotten around 500 masks to the Center for Safety and Change, because unfortunately we've seen there's another pandemic and domestic violence that has kind of followed COVID-19. Mm. We've dealt with maybe a dozen nursing homes and so far about 1,000 individuals, because several weeks ago the governor of New York said everyone should wear a mask. So we are now making masks for everyone who needs a mask.
So tell me about this community response. We're seeing a lot of, you know, people stepping up to help their healthcare workers and just help each other. I mean, how does that feel to see your community step up to help each other?
Well, it's absolutely amazing. It's almost as if there's kind of like this morphic resonance or this hive mind, because everyone seems to have gravitated towards their particular skill set or their passion or their ability. So when I go to the hospital to drop off masks, I'm amazed at how many restaurants are there delivering free meals. And then the community watched how generous mm-hmm. the restaurants are, considering the fact that they're almost out of business. They're not getting revenue anymore. So another group of residents created this thing called NIAC Nourishes, Annie Hecker and Susan Wilmick, and they raised money to pay restaurants to provide 50 individually boxed meals per day to the hospital. So they're getting revenue and they're then contributing to the frontline healthcare workers. And then another group of villagers led by the former mayor, Jen Laird White, created this thing called Make Some Noise. So every shift change, there are musicians outside playing music. And when the mayor of NIAC, you know, puts together these calls, you know, there's another group of residents that go to the community center called NIAC Center and make sure that all the kids who are getting lunch from the schools, because, you know, some kids rely on schools for their nutrition as well as their education.
Yeah.
That's another group. So when we're on these calls, it's like it's almost as if we had tried to do it on purpose. We couldn't have. But individually, you know, and kind of spontaneously, everyone has kind of stepped up.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like NIAC's a pretty special place to live.
Well, you know, we feel that way and we're proud of it, but we get our, I mean, for instance, the NIAC Nourishes idea came from this effort down the river in Piermont called Piermont Provides. And then we get calls from other mask makers who are like hoping that we can orchestrate our efforts, so we're not, you know, sending them to the same places. And then all over the world. And then when I wanted to do the mask makers, I went on and saw this incredible video from Czechoslovakia, from the Czech Republic,
oh, wow.
where in a matter of days, the whole nation, everyone had a mask. and it was a combination of individuals making their own masks and organizations. It wasn't even government, because, you know, actually, government is, it's we the people, right? So something like this happens, if you wait for a centralized organization, that could take forever. So everybody just got busy on their own.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes between all your mask deliveries to tell us about what you guys are doing. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. And, you know, to all the doctors and administrators and staff at Montefiore NIAC, you know, their need inspired our action. So they're heroes, not just in the pandemic, but all the time. And it's an honor to do whatever we can.
You can find out more about that group on Facebook or on their website, NIACMaskMakers.com. Well, this has been another episode of Radio MD COVID-19 Daily. To give us an idea or to send a healthcare hero over our way, email us at COVID19Daily@RadioMD.com. That's COVID19Daily@RadioMD.com. Have a great weekend. It's your first of May 2020, and we'll see you back on Monday. I'm Caitlin White. Stay home and stay healthy.